asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Talks are continuing in New York on Thursday between U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and General Kim Jong-chol of North Korea. The two met on Wednesday to discuss a potential summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore next month. The U.S. says it wants the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula to be the aim of any summit between President Trump and Mr. Kim. A U.S. team is thought to be in Singapore discussing logistics for the summit on June the 12th with the North Koreans. Talks are also taking place at the border between North and South Korea. And Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's been visiting Pyongyang, saying he wants a better understanding of the North's position. Correspondent Oliver Miocic is in Seoul for FSN. He says there are lots of moving parts.
An official from the Blue House, that's the presidential palace here in Seoul, saying that if they are invited, that is South Korea's Moon Jae-in, if he is invited to go along to Singapore and hold trilateral meetings with both the US and North Korea, then they will do so. However, no invitation has been issued so far, but they will make preparations just in case that should happen. Well, in a press conference last week, South Korean President Moon Jae-in had said words to a similar effect. He said he believed there should be three-way talks between the three countries, and he also said that he believes there should be a hotline set up between the three countries. We know already that there is telephone communications directly between Moon Jae-in and North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Now it looks like it wants to be widened out so that all three leaders can really speak whenever they need to try and keep these talks and the summit on track. It just highlights how important regional allies will play a part in the outcomes of this summit.
The European Court of Human Rights says Lithuania and Romania both violated the rights of two Al-Qaeda suspects by letting the CIA torture them. The ECHR says the two countries broke the European prohibition of torture. They've been ordered to pay damages to Abu Zubaydah and Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri, who are now at Guantanamo Bay. Some 1 million bank employees are staging a strike in India to demand better pay. This comes as India's banking sector is struggling with losses and the burden of bad loans. Our correspondent Rebecca Bunden reports from FSN Mumbai.
1 million bank employees are staging a two-day strike in India because they want more than the 2% wage increase they have been offered. It is largely workers from the country's 21 public sector banks that are participating in the strike. These banks have been hit hard by high levels of bad debt and are reeling from the impact of a $2 billion bank fraud, which celebrity jeweller Nirav Modi is accused of being at the centre of.
Zinedine Zidane is stepping down as Real Madrid manager days after winning the club's third Champions League title in a row. He says the team needs a change if it is to keep on winning. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Thursday's programme. I'll give you another weather update. I've been doing that every programme, the beginning of every programme anyway. It's been another glorious one in South Manchester. My God, we've had an amazing run of weather. Lovely day today. It is the 31st of May 2018. Hope you're well. I hope you've had a good day as well. This is your Richie Allen Show, of course. It's yours. Tweet me now, between now and the end of the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show. Great to be with you.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, an old friend of mine joins the program a little bit later on. He's not been on this program for nearly 3 years, but I've known him since my time in Spain. The great Bart Sibrel joins the program later on. Bart, of course, is a filmmaker known for a series of films about the moon landings, the first of which, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, has been seen as many times as Casablanca. It has. It's been seen hundreds of millions of times. Amazing guy, Bart. He joins us a little bit later on. We'll have a catch up with him. Lots been going on for him of late in recent times. And of course, we'll talk about the moon and space and Mars and all the rest of it with the lovely Bart Sabrell. He divides opinion, does Bart. There's no doubt about it. But I'm very fond of him, and I'm looking forward to that. Before that news roundup, I've got some interesting things to tell you about, and you can join in during the news roundup by dropping me a tweet with an opinion as well. Live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, tune in radio as well as richieallen.co.uk. Thanks to my old pal, Hayden Hewitt, Mr. Trigger Warning himself, for the continued maintenance on the Richie Allen website, richieallen.co.uk. Top man is Hayden. He built it. He built it, and they did come, as was promised. 5 minutes past the hour. Get in. Marvellous. Yeah. I don't know why I'm in such... Well, I'm always in good mood. But, you know, as we get to the end of the week and the weather is nice and the prospect of nice weather for the weekend is good as well, I suppose I'm in good form. Now, an interesting tweet came into the programme last night and I retweeted it and then forgot to mention it. Like the klutz that I am. Like the schmuck, like the schmeel that I am. Jane Senior, MBE, was on the programme on Tuesday. What a woman Jane is. Largely responsible for blowing the whistle on the incompetence and the lack of interest the police in Yorkshire showed towards the evidence of Muslim grooming gangs. Rotherham, amazing woman, blew the whistle, took a serious risk by sharing classified information. I say classified, sensitive information, but the information was, it was not to be released. It was, in fact, a criminal act, her sharing the information she did with the Times newspaper. Great lady, spoke to her about that on Tuesday. But one of our listeners was listening to the conversation and was moved by Jane and the work that Jane does with Swinton Lock. Now, Jane works at Swinton Lock, which is a community-based charity to help meet the educational and social needs of people with disabilities and who are at social and economic disadvantages. Okay? It's a wonderful thing. And one of our listeners was listening the other night. She doesn't want to be named. Contacted Jane and said, I'm donating the whole contents, all the contents of my shop to help Swinton Lock raise funds. So one of our listeners has got a business and basically said to Jane, I'm going to give you all the contents of my shop to help raise funds for Jane's very worthwhile organisation. That's just a lovely thing, eh? It's nice when you hear things like that, you know. It's nice to know, even in ways like that, that your programme can make some tiny difference. So just by bringing Jane on, that motivated somebody to do something like that. So I'm really proud of that listener who wants to remain anonymous. Fair enough. And well done. I'm sure she's listening. Means a lot to me, and it does mean a lot to our listeners as well. Marvellous generosity. Well done, you. Thank you. Right, let's have a look then at some of the big stories. Do you know what we'll do before we get into the, not so much heavy stuff tonight, but the heavier stuff? There was a couple of funny stories in the news today. The sort of things I would have covered in my days as a breakfast radio presenter. God be with the days. Excuse me, did you see this story today? An airplane full of tourists was forced to divert after passengers complained about somebody with foul-smelling body odour. Apparently some man was on a plane and he was so smelly, God love the man, that people around him actually fainted. Right? It was a Transavia Boeing 737. It took off from Schiphol Airport in the Netherlands, headed for Gran Canaria, but instead it touched down in Faro in Portugal. It didn't carry on to its destination. At one point, the flight crew tried to get the guy into the toilet and get him to stay there for the duration of the flight, but the pilots in the end decided to divert the flight. Have you ever heard anything like this in all your life? Passengers became increasingly distressed by the stench. As I said, vomiting and fainting ensued, and the poor man was taken off at Faro in the Algarve. Mad stuff. Belgian passenger Piet van Hout was on board and he said the stench of the man was unbearable. It was like he hadn't washed himself for several weeks. Several passengers got sick and had to puke, said Piet van Hout, the Belgian passenger. Transavia confirmed the story, saying it was due to medical reasons. Maybe the man had a medical condition that caused him to give off the very unpleasant odour. Wow. There's a great punchline at the end of this story. It's in today's Daily Mail. And the punchline is, it's not the first time something happened on a Transavia flight this year, something similar. Wait for it. Apparently, a Transavia plane flying from Dubai to Amsterdam was forced to make an emergency landing in Vienna after a passenger couldn't stop farting, which caused a brawl between several passengers. How does that happen? How does that happen? At 30,000 feet, somebody is breaking wind and it ends up causing a brawl between passengers that results in the pilot deciding to land the plane. Thank Christ there was no air marshal on board, because you could have had the lunacy of somebody being shot to death on board a 737 because they were farting. Wow. But I can beat that, because there's a story from back in 2011 which I covered when I was in Spain. The rather rotund French actor Gérard Depardieu caused a plane which was going to Dublin to return back to the gate after he decided to just stand up and piss all over the aisle because he was refused entry to the toilets. You know, they're going through the thing, waving their hands. Follow these instructions in case we need to make an emergency. Depardieu said, I want to go to the toilet. They said, no, sit down till we're in the air. So he stood up and pissed all over the floor. The world is a mad place, isn't it? Imagine being on that plane. We're not the most patient travellers these days. Imagine being on the plane today when a guy's got to be taken off because he's rather smelly. Gérard Depardieu. Whenever I think of Gérard Depardieu, I can't help but thinking of the English comedian Joe Pasquale, who came up with this fantastic little ditty.
Gentlemen, you know, I was very disappointed to find out that Michael Bublé's not on the show. I was told Michael Bublé might be on, but they lied. He's not here at all. Apparently he's at a wedding, big showbiz wedding in America. Apparently Whoopi Goldberg is now going to marry the French actor Gérard Depardieu, and now she's going to be called Whoopi Doopidoo.
Boom, boom. Right, 12 minutes past the hour. Enough of the messing. Enough of the messing, as we would say in Ireland. Let's get to the serious stuff. The president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, has given an in-depth interview to Russia Today, which was broadcast in its entirety earlier. In fact, if you want to watch it later on, the entire interview can be found at RT.com or RT's YouTube channel. Now, it's the first in-depth interview that Assad has given for quite a while, because there's been a lot going on. The only in-depth interviews he has given in the last year or so have been to RT. I think it's about 2 years now since he sat down with the BBC for a proper interview. So RT went to see him. He was first asked a good question. How close does he think we are to the end of hostilities? The end of the so-called war in Syria. This is what the Syrian president had to say.
With every move forward in the battlefield, with every victory, with every liberated area, we are moving closer to the end of the conflict. And I always said, without external interference, it won't take more than a year to settle the situation in Syria. But at the same time, with every move forward for the Syrian army and for the political process, and for the whole situation forward in the positive meaning towards the more stability, our enemies and our opponents, mainly the West, led by the United States and their puppets in Europe and in our region, with their mercenaries in Syria, they try to make it farther, either by supporting more terrorism, bringing more terrorists coming to Syria, or by hindering the political process. So our challenge is, how can we make this gap, to close this gap between their plans and our plans. And I think we are succeeding in that regard. But at the same time, it's difficult for anyone to tell you when. But it is getting closer. That's self-evident.
So the Americans and their puppets in Europe and the Israelis continue to support jihadists no matter how difficult it's getting now for them to achieve their aims, because the Syrian government, of course, has achieved success in Aleppo, in Homs, in Damascus and the surrounding areas. Nearly there, said Assad, but the Americans and their puppets continue to flog a dead horse by sending in more jihadists and more arms. So Assad was then reminded that tens of thousands of jihadists who have fled Damascus and Aleppo and Homs, surrounding areas, they're now building defences in Idlib. Could the president accept that Idlib might be out of government control for a time? This is what he said.
Actually, we always say we're going to liberate every area. So it's impossible for us to intentionally leave any area on the Syrian soil outside our control as government. This is natural. And as you know, Idlib was captured by the terrorists in 2015 with this Turkish support. It was mainly captured by al-Nusra and some other supportive factions. We started the reconciliations before that time, but every reconciliation happened after that time, after 2015. It was, I think, May 2015. Every faction wanted to leave the city or the village. They choose to go to Idlib. This is a very good indication that they have the same ideology, because they choose to go to al-Nusra area. They didn't choose to go to any other area. So we didn't send people to Idlib. They wanted to go to Idlib because they have the same incubator. They have the same atmosphere, way of thinking, and so on. This one part, the other part, which is military aspect of your question, the plan of the terrorists and their masters was to distract the Syrian army by scattering the different units all over the Syrian soil, which is not good for any army. Our plan was to put them in one area, two areas, three areas. If you have two or three or four frontiers, better than having tens and maybe more than 100 frontiers at the same time. So militarily, it is better. They chose it, but it's better for us from the military point of view.
Nice diplomatic way of putting things there from the Syrian president. Nice diplomatic way of saying, let them all gather in Idlib or around Idlib. We will blow the piss out of them there. Let them all congregate in one place rather than open up frontiers elsewhere, which makes it more difficult. Okay, fair enough. So what about the US military presence in the country? It's one thing to be driving back these Wahhabists, these jihadists, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, ISIS, whatever name they're giving them today, SDF or SDP, whatever they're calling them. What about the US military presence in the country? Well, he didn't pull any punches.
We don't have any other option. So this is our land, it's our right, and it's our duty to liberate it. And the American should leave somehow. They're going to leave. They came to Iraq with no legal basis. And look what happened to them. They have to learn the lesson. Iraq is no exception. And Syria is no exception. People will not accept foreigners in this region anymore.
Fantastic stuff, really. He said, by hook or by crook, one way or another, the United States will leave our country. Good for him. What about Israel and the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's threats that Syria could be destroyed by Israel? I think Netanyahu used the term liquidated. What did the president have to say about Israel?
Since we were born, I'm talking about my generation, and most of the generations now in Syria, we lived under the threat of the Israeli aggression. This is something in our unconscious feeling. So to say that you're afraid while living with the same threat for decades, this is nonsense. Israeli has been assassinating, killing, occupying for decades now, for more than around 7 decades in this region. But usually they do all this without threatening. Now, why do they threat in this way? This is panic. This is kind of hysterical feeling because they are losing the dear ones. The dear ones, Al-Nusra and ISIS. That's why Israel now is panicking recently, and we understand their feeling.
Well, Israel is now seemingly striking across Syria, airstrikes at will. They're boasting publicly on camera again and again that your defenses, they're powerless to stop them, that they can do in Syria whatever they want. Is that true? Is there anything you can do to stop Israel carrying out its airstrikes in Syria?
Actually, the first target of the mercenaries in Syria was the air defense. Before attacking any other military base, it was the air defense. And you would be surprised at that time, why do they attack the air defense? The air defense will not deal with the peaceful demonstrators, as they say, or the moderate forces, and it cannot deal with extremists anyway. It's another thing, it's to defend the country. This is the other proof that Israel was in direct link with those terrorists in Syria. So they attacked those bases and they destroyed big part of our air defenses. Now, in spite of that, our position, air defense is much stronger than before, thanks to the Russian support and the recent attacks by the Israeli and by the American and British and French proved that we are in a better situation. Now, the only option, my answer to your question, is to improve our air defense. This is the only thing that we can do, and we are doing that.
Good stuff. There's a little bit more to that, but you heard the more salient points of that interview. If you want to see all of it, it's available at RT.com. It's their interview, their property. And you can see it on their YouTube channel as well. Go to YouTube.com. Just look for RT. Good stuff. I suppose those behind that entity, behind the chaos in Syria, is probably wondering what the hell is going on. Expected, of course, probably 4-5 years ago for this to be over and for a puppet government to be in place in Damascus. Or, even more likely, just widespread lunacy, chaos, Mad Max, the sort of situation that we see in Libya today, which we've talked about a lot on this programme. James tweets, thanks James. No politician can claim to have clean hands, but I'm continually impressed with Assad's frankness. No wonder the US hates him, says James. David tweets, it's about time someone told it like it is. On the world stage, go Bashar, says David there. Cheers for that. 22.5 minutes past the hour. Very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, is it not Belgium? Denmark has banned. What has Denmark banned again, Richie? The veil, the full face veil. That ban will come into force on the 1st of August, but the law was passed in Danish Parliament today. We'll have a little chat about that when I come back, and I'm very keen on your opinion on that. Denmark has passed a ban on full face veils. What do you think? We will talk about US steel, Donald Trump imposing tariffs on steel coming in from Mexico, from the EU, amongst other places. We'll talk about that and much more this hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, Thursday, May 31st, 2018.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www. www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today. Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yes, welcome back indeed. Thursday's program live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, richieallen.co.uk. Thank you, Les, for tweeting a link to the Assad interview. I'm sure people could have found it, Les, but thank you very much. To Twitter again, just very briefly, Moinga tweeted, Assad sounds very sure and precise in his own practical approach. And Base Ninja tweets, my late father worked in Damascus and Aleppo. He told me the Syrians were the nicest people he met in the Middle East, and Aleppo was a true jewel. Look at Aleppo now. Bastards, says Base Ninja. Yeah. Yeah. There was a BBC report from Damascus. Not from Damascus. Was it from Damascus? It was from Damascus the other day. From southern Damascus, I think. And it looks like a scene you'd see from a Hollywood film. It looks like there are years and years of reparation, rebuilding to be done there. It's pretty dreadful. And of course, the bastards behind it obviously envisaged even, as they did with Iraq, giving no bid contracts to their buddies, their globalist buddies, Halliburton and companies like this. Yes, we've just gone and wrecked the fucking place. You can have no bid contracts. We'll give you billions now to go in and build it up again under the puppet government that we've installed. But it ain't working out for them at the moment. And it doesn't look like it's going to work out for them, at least in the way they wanted it to. They might have cards up their sleeves yet still in terms of invading the country. Don't rule it out. Please God, no, but don't rule it out. Now, Denmark has passed a ban on full-face veils. It's the latest in a number of countries in the EU to pass such a ban. It affects Muslim women mostly, wearing a niqab or burqa. It passed by 75 votes to 30 in Parliament today. As I said earlier, it comes into force on the 1st of August. If you're found in violating the ban, you will be expected to pay a fine of 1,000 kroner, which is about £120, thereabouts, £118. But if you repeat the offence, having been fined once, you might be fined over £1,000. The wording of the new legislation does not specifically mention Muslim women, but says that anyone who wears a garment that hides the face in public will be punished with a fine. Denmark's Justice Minister Søren Pape Poulsen said, in terms of value, I see a discussion of what kind of society we should have with the roots and culture we have, that we don't cover our face and eyes. We must be able to see each other, and we must be able to see each other's facial expressions. It is a value in Denmark. I'm sure the alt-right are loving this. They love this. Good luck to them. I'm not saying they're wrong. Amnesty International has said it's a discriminatory violation of women's rights. But the European Court of Human Rights last year upheld Belgium's ban on full-face veils. The ECHR said that communal harmony trumped the individual's right to religious expression. Do you like that? Do you like that idea? That communal harmony trumps your individual right to religious expression. What do you think? What happened to individual freedom? Because there is no freedom if the government can tell you what to wear. Now don't think for a minute that I'm delighted with the niqab or the burqa. I've had my issues with them in Manchester and in London. I find them a little bit sinister. I don't like them. but maybe I can go and fuck off, maybe. And just not look at them, maybe. I don't know. I don't see any compromise here. I'd like to know what you think. What about saying, right, ladies, you've got to take it off in banks, official buildings, supermarkets, I don't know. Give and take, maybe. I don't know. What do you think? I'm no liberal. I'm no progressive. I think you know that. And I'm not thrilled by the niqab. I really am not. Saw a bit of it in Spain as well. What do you think? Let me know. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Trevor says, how you, Trevor? Trevor the mule. Trevor the mule. Hope you're not a drugs mule, Trev. Well, maybe I do. Maybe I hope you are a drugs mule. If Denmark wants to ban something, they should ban the slaughter of whales and dolphins in the Faroe Islands. A lot of our listeners would agree with that. Tiger Johnson tweets, how you doing, Tiger? Assad is someone I would refer to as a statesman. And Base Ninja tweets, I thought the ban was full face clothes. So no ninjering around in Denmark for me then. Yes, people have unkindly, it has been argued, unkindly referred to women who wear the niqab as ninjas. I've heard that expression quite a lot over here. I don't know, folks. You know, I'm not thrilled about it. I'm a religious. I'm an atheist. I think religions are crazy. I've explained a lot about why I believe religions came into being. Don't like them. But still, if somebody wants to wear something, should the government tell them they can't? What do you think? Let me know at Richie Allen Show. Right, let's move on then. That was in the BBC today, just as I was coming on air. More, it's 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Bart Sabrell joins the programme a bit later on. Arkady or Arkady Babchenko, this is the journalist, the Russian journalist who faked his own death in order to evade what he says was a Russian plot to assassinate him. Now today, he said pig's blood and a makeup artist were used to help stage the incident. Ukrainian officials reported on Tuesday that Babchenko had been murdered outside his apartment in Kiev. They posted these horrible pictures of him lying in a pool of blood. The media was very quick to say Russia was behind it. This is disgraceful, but it's what we expect. The broadsheet media and the broadcast media in this country rushed to say, oh, a Russian journalist is dead, the bastard Russians. And then yesterday he turned up at a press conference and he was in fine fettle, so he was, to be sure, to be sure. He was in fine fettle. Wow. What a story. So Babchenko, he's taken a bit of stick over the deception from some journalists who are a bit red-faced, a bit embarrassed because they believed it and rushed to blame the Russians. He said today, I went along with it because I was told my life was in danger. Now, John White is a political commentator and he spoke to RT today and he suggested a plausible motive for this fairly bizarre story.
The timing is key, I think. Just before we start the World Cup in Russia, which is a showcase event for any country that holds a World Cup, that hosts a World Cup, and suddenly we're getting these stories which are designed, I would speculate, to discredit Russia and discredit Russia in the eyes of the world, just as it's about to host the World Cup. And so this is a very lamentable campaign that's been targeting Russia because it's now interfering in areas in which all nations have in the past understood that they are off limits when it comes to using them for propaganda purposes, such as trying to use a World Cup to undermine the host nation. That does no good to anyone, especially at a time when we need to try and foment understanding.
Yeah, I think he's onto something when he says it might be down to Russia hosting the World Cup, which is only a couple of weeks away. At least the opening ceremony is anyway. You might remember back in the late winter, I feared, and feared was the right word, I thought that at the 11th hour, that FIFA would take the World Cup away from Russia. I thought that was on the table. Of course, I was wrong because I'm mostly wrong when it comes to my predictions. I'm no Nostradamus. But I thought that was a real possibility, and if that didn't happen, I thought that some countries might pull out of it and have their own summer tournament in the UK, because the UK's got the best stadia in the world and all ready to go. Honky-dory, but it hasn't come to pass. But watch the World Cup closely. Watch it for possible false flag attacks. Keep an eye on the World Cup for false flag. I don't mean necessarily big terrorist incidents, but I wouldn't rule them out. But also, while it's on, and while Russia is on full display to the world, its lovely cities, its beautiful architecture, its lovely stadia, don't be surprised if something happens that Russia is blamed for. That's all I'm saying. So keep an eye on that. A few more comments coming in about the burqa, the niqab. David tweets, David Stanford, I don't see why religion should allow you to do things everyone else can't, but are they also going to ban the mercenaries who pose as cops during false flags wearing their full face balaclava? Good stuff, David. I was at Manchester Airport again last Saturday to pick up my partner, Caroline, the oft-mentioned. And I got there. I've learned to time my visits to the airport because I'm only a 15-minute drive away. So I've learned to time them so I'm not waiting around forever. So I waited until I was watching the radar thing on the flight app, on the app. Not on the app, but on my laptop. And I saw the plane was coming into land. So I set off then, so I didn't have to wait there too long. But yeah, Manchester Airport is full of these stormtroopers, head to toe in Kevlar, body armour, faces covered, walking around like fucking retards in a so-called free and open and fair society. These fools that look like Robocops walking around. See, David, what you started? You see what you started, David? Anyway, Moinga tweeted, to counter what David said, I think the women would take them off respectfully when in public spaces like banks where you will interact with strangers. So that might have been a compromise. Rather than say you can't wear the niqab anymore, why not say, look, when you're in buildings, you can't wear it. How about that? Right? Right. Cartoon Drunk says, what about a bloke wearing a Borat mankini? Would that go down well in Saudi Arabia, or would you end up in a chop shop square off with your head? Richard Angelus tweets, I agree, only banning all face coverings in banks, jewellers and on all government-owned buildings, universities. Other places must be free to decide for themselves, says Richard. James tweets, a lot of interest in this. The burqa inhibits the efficacy of facial recognition and other CCTV tech. Maybe that's part of the reason behind the ban. Conspiracy alert, laugh out loud, says James. Good stuff, James. 23 minutes to the top of the hour. Big story, this. It's been. I didn't lead with this because, for me, the big story today is the interview with Assad, the Syrian president, and the remarks made by Bashar al-Assad in that interview. But this is a big story. The United States has said it will impose tariffs on steel and aluminium imports from allies in Europe and North America. The US set a 25% tax on steel and a 10% tax on aluminium from the EU, Mexico and Canada will begin at midnight tonight, presumably midnight Eastern time. DC is on Eastern time, presumably. The move triggered vows of retaliation from Mexico and the EU, which called the tariff protectionism pure and simple. The UK said it was deeply disappointed. EU Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström said it was a bad day for world trade, while European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said the move was totally unacceptable, and we can hear a little of what Jean-Claude the Drunker said a little earlier today.
This is a bad day for the world trade. The European Union cannot react to that without any kind of reaction, so we'll immediately introduce a settlement dispute on the WTO level, and will announce in the next coming hours counterbalancing measures. What they can do, we are able to do exactly the same. It's totally unacceptable that a country is imposing unilateral measures when it comes to world trade.
Yeah, Jean-Claude Drunker. Oh, they're pissed off in the EU. Well, cheesed off. Sky News spoke with the communications manager of Eurofer. That's a guy called Charles de Lusignan. Charles de Lusignan, the communications manager of Eurofer, and he's not happy at all.
Well, good afternoon. Well, very serious indeed. We export about 5 billion euros worth of steel to the US every year. And if that's all hit, if that's hit by 25% tariffs, that's going to create a quite significant loss of market share for EU producers who have long been reliable partners in the US. So this is an absolutely dismal day, not only for EU steel producers, but also for the world trade system in general.
And could you elaborate more on this impact? What damage could there be? Could we see a loss of jobs?
Well, at the extreme, our calculations when the measures were first proposed was that, in fact, on both sides of the Atlantic, there could be job losses of up to 140,000 jobs.
Hold on there just a minute, Charles de Lusignan. Imagine the balls, imagine the cojones of a European Union puppet talking about this resulting in job losses when the European Union, through making it illegal for countries to protect their own steel industries, has itself cost millions of jobs. Millions. Millions. Millions of jobs. What a puppet. How dare he? How dare any Brussels bureaucrat, wanker, unelected official talk about the possibility the jobs are going to be lost over this, when that institution has destroyed the steel industry in the United Kingdom and right across Europe. Hey? Unbelievable. He goes on.
Directly and indirectly by sectors affected, linked to the steel sector. So the effect could be very, very large indeed if the measures stick, which of course we hope they don't. And indeed, the EU's response has been very firm, very vigorous. We welcome this. And the only way that these damaging tariffs are going to ever be dismantled is if the EU stands firm in responding to the US by saying, no, this doesn't go, this doesn't fly. You can't do this in the context of a free multilateral trading system.
What difference will that make if Europe takes that stance? Can it protect itself?
The irony. Referring to Europe as one country is what she's doing there. A super state. Can Europe protect itself? When, as I said, and I have to labour this point, steel companies right across the European Union in countries have been destroyed because of their rules and regulations on the importation of steel and their ridiculous so-called pro-competition laws that mean that when companies want to take on full large-scale building projects in the UK, they can't just buy UK steel. They have to put the bid out to tender, out to the European Union. Right? What does he say?
Elf.
Well, I think Europe is evidence that it can protect itself, and bear in mind that it is the world's largest and richest open market that does take in a lot of US imports, as well as exporting to the US. So, no, the EU has a unique position here, and it can take the lead in being a guardian for world trade and supporting the multilateral system that the US ultimately helped build in the first place. You know, Donald Trump will likely only be there for a couple of years, whereas the world trading system has been there since the end of the war. So it's important that it is maintained. And I think Europe, if it stands united and makes a commitment to solid messaging on this and acting accordingly, I think they could actually come out of this better than worse.
If you were running a country, why would you allow tens of thousands of your citizens lose their jobs because companies were buying cheap steel either from Europe or from China? Why would you allow that? Why? Your duty, your job, your responsibility is to the people of your country, is to protect your industries. These bastards have made protectionism a bad word, a dirty word. It's insane that you would import steel. It's the easiest thing in the world to manufacture. No country in the world should import it. You should have thousands of people in work doing it. Now, I don't know whether to believe Trump or not. Trump is a Rothschild Zionist puppet. I've no idea what's going on there. I wish it was true. Not just in America, but here as well. It's one of the great things about leaving the European Union. Not that it's ever going to happen. No. we will subsidise certain industries. Because that's what government should do. Yes, steel is... there isn't anything more important to a country, to keep a country going, than steel. So as a government, we'll subsidise these... we'll partly nationalise these companies. Public-private partnerships, keep people in work, we'll subsidise where necessary. And we will run our country. And we will build our country using steel manufactured in this country. All the EU has done is wreck industry. Whether it's fishing, whether it's steel, whether it's car manufacturing. Destroyed it. And now these bastards are crying because the Americans have said, well, no, we're going to protect our steel and aluminium. How serious Trump is about that, I have no idea. But anyway, crazy. Les tweets, if the UK did the same as the US, then maybe we could make our own steel and create thousands of jobs. Yes, Les, but not create thousands, save thousands of jobs and re-employ people who've lost their jobs. We spoke a lot 2 years ago about Redcar and what was going on there and Brussels interference in that situation that made it impossible for the UK government to bail people out, help people. Right, okay. We're going to build 500,000 new houses for people who can't afford to rent. Social housing. 500,000 we're going to build. Or 1 million. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to make that steel in this country. And we're not going to borrow from the the Bank of England to pay for that. Because by doing that, we're really borrowing from the Rothschild-controlled European Central Bank. We're going to make the money. We'll issue the currency. Put people back to work. Put hundreds of thousands of people back to work. Just like that. People have said to me before, when I've ranted like this, you're full of shit, Richie, you know nothing about it. I know everything about it. I know everything about it. Been studying it for years, economics. If you issue your own debt-free currency, marvellous. I tell you what, lads, we're going to build 1 million houses for people. Nice houses. 3-bedroom houses for people, semi-detached, where we can. And we're going to get British labourers, men and women, to do it. And we're going to... the materials are going to be made by British companies. Think about it. It's one I'm very passionate about, as you might have gathered. Madness. 12 minutes. 13 minutes to the top of the hour. Where am I? Have I any time to do this next story? I want to do this next story. Germaine Greer is an author and feminist. And I've always taken an interest in what Germaine has had to say. I find her engaging and thought-provoking, even if, of course, there are things that would leave me a little bit behind or leave me cold. What's wrong with that? You know what I think about identity politics? I don't like isms. I don't like ologies. I don't like feminism. I don't like anything that has to do with identity politics. Feminism belongs in that category, but it doesn't matter. I like smart people, and Germaine Greer is a smart woman. Whether she's right or whether she's wrong. She's getting it in the neck today, though, because she was addressing the Hay Festival. It's a literary festival, and she was talking about rape. And she said that rape shouldn't be viewed as a spectacularly violent crime, but more as a lazy, careless, and insensitive act. She suggested 200 hours community service and perhaps an or tattoo on the rapist's hand, arm or cheek was an appropriate comment. Maybe she was joking when she said that. Now, she was violently raped when she was 18 years old. And she said, in cases of violent rape, the courts should concentrate on the violence, attracting higher sentences rather than having lengthy trials in which women are humiliated for long periods. And at this Hay Literary Festival, she said rape was widespread and the legal system could not cope because it always comes down to consent, with the victims becoming bits of evidence. She said, I want to turn the discourse about rape upside down. We are not getting anywhere approaching it down the tunnel of history. Most rapes don't involve any injury whatsoever. Most rape is just lazy, just careless, insensitive every time a man rolls over on his exhausted wife and insists on enjoying his conjugal rights, he is raping her. It will never end up in a court of law. Instead of thinking of rape as a spectacularly violent crime, and some rapes are, think of it as non-consensual. It is bad sex, sex where there is no communication, no tenderness, no mention of love. She also went on to say, Germaine Greer, something which she has said a lot about the Me Too movement. She said she's tired of women being portrayed as victims and women seeking victimhood. Controversial comments, these. Here's Sky News on it today.
Now, the author Germaine Greer has caused controversy with her calls for rape sentences to be drastically cut. Speaking at the Hay Festival, she said the current system of prosecuting rape is not working. She suggested most rapists could be ordered to do community service with harsher sentences for obvious violence, although she argued that the majority of cases are non-violent.
Instead of thinking of rape as a spectacularly violent crime, and some rapes are, think about it as consensual, non-consensual, that is, bad sex. Most rape is just lazy, just careless, just insensitive, every time.
Yeah, that was Sky News' rough cut. They rough cut it there. So controversial comments indeed, and I'm pretty sure there are people listening to this programme who are sexually assaulted, and they might be wound up by those comments. Fair enough. So they invited an anti-harassment campaigner on. What does that mean, anti-harassment campaigner? The woman's name is Kelsey Mohammed. Here's Kelsey Mohammed responding to what Germaine Greer said today.
That interview itself was very hard to watch, to be honest. I found it very upsetting, and I do want to acknowledge a lot of the survivors out there who may have found that interview very upsetting, because I find that she definitely diminished and minimized the experiences of survivors. I think the analysis that she has, which is partly correct in terms of the criminal justice system not being set up to support survivors, and that it's not currently working to imprison perpetrators, and that is not ending rape. But the way that she has now minimized rape as if it's not serious, I think speaks to her completely misunderstanding the problem. And really, it's just not been what we want in terms of the narrative around sexual violence, because what we really want to look at is the ways that we can support survivors as a community, because we see that the criminal justice system is not doing that.
But did she minimise rape, Germaine Greer, in what she said? Or was it that she didn't choose her words very carefully? Was Greer trying to say that rape is a terrible thing? Where somebody rapes somebody violently, they should be in prison. But when somebody maybe could have not consented, maybe could have, I don't know what to say here. This is a strange one. I kind of understand what Greer was trying to get at, but I can't articulate it any better than she was trying to. And I think she's more articulate than me, pretty sure she is. What was she trying to say there? Maybe she was saying that some women, I think she was trying to say that some women have complained after the fact, when maybe they might have been able to extricate themselves from it, from that situation. Maybe it was non-consensual sex in a relationship. Non-violent. The guy didn't force himself on her. She didn't want it. Maybe said she didn't want it. Maybe she was badgered into it, went along with it anyway. Is that what she was talking about? I don't know, because somebody grabbing somebody and forcing themselves on them, penetrating them, they should be fucking banged up forever, as far as I'm concerned. But what was she trying to get at? Do you have any idea what she was trying to get at? I think it's kind of profound, but I think she was struggling to articulate it. Bearing in mind that this is the same woman who spoke out against the Me Too movement, saying she's tired of women claiming victimhood because they were asked out for a date or because their arse was pinched in a, you know, and that's wrong as well. I've never pinched anybody's arse that I worked with, male or female. But she was saying, why don't you turn around and, you know, basically punch him in the fucking mouth and say, don't do it again. Don't be a victim. She's trying to differentiate between relationships where there has been some sort of non-consensual sex and what could be or should be done about that. And that's where she was talking about laziness. But I don't think this anti-harassment campaigner, Kelsey Mohammed, really knows her arse from her elbow, as she demonstrates here.
I think these comments are hugely unhelpful in terms of because we want to expand the, what we have done in our work is expanded the definition of violence to understand that coercion, control, manipulation, all of these things still affect survivors in terms of having long-term effects of trauma. And when we want to look at actually uprooting the culture that normalizes sexual violence, we need to look at that whole spectrum. We need to look at how we can support survivors, how the services that we need to provide, and we need to look at a holistic approach to education in order to prevent.
That's got nothing to do with what Germaine Greer was saying, though. Normalizing sexual violence, well, that's pornography, which is widely available. We talked about this yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. So try and stop youngsters from seeing this violent pornography. Yes, of course. But as for caring for people who have been raped, that's got nothing to do with the Justice Department or law and order. It's up to law and order to bring cases against people where they can prove that somebody has been raped or sexually assaulted. After they have either found somebody guilty through a proper judicial process or not, it's up to the health authorities and the health providers to provide care and trauma counselling for women and men who have been sexually assaulted. I don't think it's got anything to do with what Greer was saying. I've invited Germaine Greer on the programme before and I've never heard back from her. I'd like to have her on to ask her, what do you mean by that? To talk about this Me Too movement and to talk about these comments that she made on rape. I think it's a very interesting area to explore. I really do. It's come up a few times on the programme lately and I want to get into it in depth in the very near future. It is exactly 4.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Bart Sobrell joins me in less than 5 minutes' time. It's been nearly 3 years since we've chatted. I love Bart, love listening to him, and can't wait to chat with him again. He'll be with me in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, I'm going to take a very quick break. It's your Richie Allen Show for Thursday, the 31st of May 2018.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back indeed. Just a couple of comments that I want to get through before we introduce Bart. Some interesting comments there. James, thanks for the comment. He says, I think, and I poorly said this, I said this very poorly in fact, ironically, I said this poorly myself. James, you're bang on, I think. I think what she's driving at is the idea that if a husband asks his wife for sex 50 times in an hour and she eventually says yes, gives in, that's not the same as rape, perhaps. Beyond that, I'm out. Articulation of this issue is a nightmare. That's good. I find that as well. Now, Susan says, I've never viewed Germaine Greer as intelligent. She's like some weirdly programmed helpmate of destruction of female identity, and nothing that falls from her mouth even has ever benefited women ever. Susan, fair enough. You're entitled to that opinion, of course. I disagree with you. I've been listening to her and watching her and reading her for a long time, more than 20 years, and there would be things that she would say that I would laugh out loud at. But other times I find it very sharp and very on point. But I take your point. Thanks for the tweet there. Liz says, should a woman be asked more than once if she says no? Liz, I would say no. Now, have I asked my partner for sex before and she said no? Yes. Have I asked her again? Probably yes. What was the result of that? I live with a very strong woman and I was told basically to fuck off. Basically to go to a dark room by myself and sort myself out. That's the truth. Me asking for a second time would have been kind of, oh, come on. But that would have been the end of it. Is the truth of it. You know, I'm not a perfect guy. But I wouldn't be, you know, insisting. You know, if you lived with somebody as long as I've lived with my partner, 16 years, that's a lot these days. But I'm sure there are people listening to this program that have been married for 25, 30, 40 years. When you've been married, when you've been together 16 years, there have been times when one or the other in a couple wants relations. Relations. And the other person doesn't. And if you're aroused and the other person doesn't, it's frustrating. Right? Right, I would have said yes. But yeah, you shouldn't insist. Of course you should not insist. When the other person says no, you should say fair enough and go to a dark room with a nudie magazine or something else. Sort yourself out and then just get on with things. That's what I would say. Right, let's welcome my guest this hour to the programme. He's an old friend of mine. I've known him for years. I first met him when in fact, when I was making radio programmes in Spain back in the late noughties. I have a lot of time for him. I think he's a great guy. And it's been over 3 years since he was on this programme. Can you believe it? 3 years since he was on this programme. He's made several films and we'll talk about them. But he'll always be remembered for his 2001 film, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. Now, this has been seen as many times as Casablanca. And no piece of journalism, no piece of documentary filmmaking has done as much to throw light on the discrepancies in the story about how man went to the moon in 1969. It's a brilliant film. It really is. But he's done a lot of films since and a lot of work since. He's a terrific filmmaker, broadcaster and journalist. And you can check him out at Sabrell.com or moonmovie.com. You can read, you can watch his videos and find out more about him on YouTube. It's youtube.com/BartSabrell1. It's been too long since he was on this programme. Great to welcome back an old pal, Bart Sabrell. How are you, Bart? He's not there after all that. Are you there, Bart? Ah, right. He can't hear me or we can't hear him. I wonder, has he got his microphone muted? I wonder. Well, I'm going to have to disconnect and reconnect and try again. He might have his mic muted, no? Check your mic there, Bart. See if you've accidentally muted it. Let me know if you can hear me by sending me a text. I've not taken any music at all, so I can take a bit of music in the meantime anyway. And I've got some 80s cheese lined up in the event that something went wrong. Here it is. All right, I think we've sorted the problem and I think Bart is there now. Welcome back, old pal. How are you?
Good. Technology, she is a fickle mistress, isn't she?
Well, you've no excuse, Bart, because you, when you started out, you had to be chief cook and bottle washer. You had to be everything. Director. You had to be cameraman. You had to be sound man. Everything. So I'm not having it, but I'm glad that we sorted that out. Great to have you back. It's been a long time and meant what I said. Have you any idea how many people around the world have seen A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon? I wasn't exaggerating when I said it's probably been seen as many people as Casablanca. What do you think?
I'm not sure about that one. I know that there have been many unauthorized uploads onto YouTube. So I would say it's probably about 10 times the views on my channel, which is about, I don't know, 1.5 million or something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it's an exaggeration to say that more than 100 million people have seen it. Because when I spoke with you about this first, way back in my time in Spain, we were inundated by callers from all over Spain, English-speaking callers, to say they'd seen it. They'd gotten a copy of it. They'd seen it on television through, you know, various satellite channels, or they'd seen it on YouTube, or they'd seen it on one of the other platforms, Dailymotion. It's brilliant. It changed your life, didn't it, Bart? I mean, you were a totally different person before you made the film to the person you became afterwards, because you probably couldn't have expected the reaction you'd get to it.
Well, by the way, the film has been translated into Spanish and into French and into Russian. And I believe it's Astronauts Gone Wild is being presently subtitled into one of those languages as well. As far as it changing my life, I would say the moment it changed my life, you know, the project was a 5-year endeavor. We raised $500,000 and largely financed by a person who is right now a board member of an aerospace company building rockets for NASA, who wishes to remain anonymous, as you might imagine. Yeah. And he knows from an engineering point of view that the rocket didn't have enough fuel, that the lunar module did not have enough battery power to sit on the moon for 3 days and combat air conditioning against 250-degree heat, and that the processors back then were not fast enough. I mean, a modern-day cell phone has 1 million times the computing power than all of NASA did back in 1969, and what they claim to have done is to go from 0 miles per hour to 4,000 miles per hour synchronizing. You know, the command module was allegedly orbiting the moon at 4,000 miles an hour, and they went from zero, perfectly synchronized, to 4,000 miles per hour, which if they were off by more than a tenth of a second, you know, they would have all died. And so you have to realize that in the entire history of the world, there has never been a technological achievement that once it was achieved, whether it be, you know, the nuclear bomb or the sound barrier or first flight or flying across the Atlantic, that once achieved, no one on Earth was able to repeat it for 50 years, including the people who claimed to have done it. That has never happened in the history of technology, except going to the moon. And that's proof itself that they didn't go. I mean, if it was so easy to go to the moon on the very first attempt with 1 millionth the computing power of a cell phone, people would have been on Mars 25 years ago, and there would be bases there. I mean, there are bases on the South Pole. It's nearly 100 degrees below zero Fahrenheit all the time at 100 mile per hour winds nearly all the time. And so if they can somehow physically be there, then they would be, which they are. So if it were possible to go to the moon, there would be bases there right now. The fact that there are not is proof itself that it cannot be done.
Yeah, you took the next question away from me, because when I mentioned earlier you were coming on, there was much delight amongst our audience, because I don't do enough of this, maybe, this type of chat on the programme, because we like to delve into the esoteric and the scientific, and we like to have a go at, you know, big government claims that have a lot of doubt about them. But yeah, I was going to mention the fact that we've not been back, and I think the last time you and I spoke was after one president or another. It might have been late W. Bush or early Obama when they said, oh, we hope to go back to the moon in 20 years. And I got you on the phone straight away. And I said, well, if it was that easy, well, why do we have to wait 20 years to go back to the moon? Surely they can just go up in, you know, 3 or 4 months if they want. But they're not.
That's a very good point, Richie. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen a mirage in the desert as you're driving down a hot highway.
No.
But basically, you see what appears to be water, let's say 100 yards down, and then it's always 100 yards down. You never get there. And they have claimed that they're going to return to the moon in 10 years about 5 times. And each time they make the claim every 10 years, and they forget that they've kept making that claim for the last 10 years over and over and over again. You know, it's really remarkable. And it is a life-changing experience. I wanted to fully answer that question, too. I mean, we've spent 5 years, spent $500,000 financed by someone working at NASA who's a multimillionaire, you know, higher IQ than Einstein, who knows for a fact that they did not go. And I figured, you know, we'll never know for sure. I'll produce the film under the theory we didn't go. And then I pop in that tape that's shown, and a funny thing happened on the way to the moon at Sibrel.com. And lo and behold, it says on the screen, you know, what you're about to see, do not show to the public. And it's unedited footage of them doing a fake shot over and over and over again, talking about how they're faking it. And there's even a third channel of audio of the CIA telling them how to fake it. You know, we hear NASA talking, there's dead air for 4 seconds, and then we hear a third channel say, talk, and then Neil Armstrong answers the question. So he was really in Earth orbit the entire time. I mean, you have to realize it's 50 years later. The farthest a human being can go on a rocket is only 200 miles above the Earth, or 1/1000th the distance to the moon. How can we only be 1/1000th as technically advanced today as we were 50 years ago?
And you answered, know? Yeah, you answered Les's, loads of tweets coming in here. Bart, you're not on Twitter, at least I can't find you on Twitter. If you are, let me know. Les has tweeted that very thing. He says, Richie, Bart is right. NASA have admitted at least 5 times that they can't go higher than low Earth orbit. They didn't go to the moon, says Les. He absolutely agrees with you. So much that we're going to get into between now and the top of the hour with Bart. Bart, was it about Russia, was it? Was it about the space race? And here's a great question. Would, because we all love Kennedy. Now, you might not love him, but we love him. We think he was the last honest president. We believe he wanted to take on the globalists. He wanted to take on the Federal Reserve. He wanted to do good things. He wanted to pull out of Vietnam. Did Kennedy know it was faked?
Well, you know, you know your history going pretty
to be,
well.
Or going to be fake, because he died, of course, in 63. My apologies, Bart. He was assassinated in 63. Would he have thought, well, we're going to have to fake it?
Well, I always thought that the scheme to fake it was developed during the Johnson administration. In the 225 years of American history, there's only been 2 occasions in which an incumbent president eligible for re-election did not run. And one of those occasions was Lyndon Johnson, because I believe he knew they were about to fake the moon landing, and who knew if that would work or not. I mean, it might work, it might not work. And if he got caught, oh my goodness, what a scandal that would be. You know, in fact, Nixon, get this, here we are doing the greatest event in human history, allegedly, and Nixon doesn't even show up for the launch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's afraid to have a picture of himself of shaking Neil Armstrong's hand, and then the whole thing unraveling later. You know?
Wow. And then of course he'd be implicated in the hoax. So right, I'm with you. I didn't know that.
Absolutely. Now I can tell you, and I don't know that I've ever mentioned this in a broadcast before, but maybe you're the only one who asked that question about Kennedy. I did receive in 1999 from an elderly gentleman who worked for the Kennedy administration, a photocopy of a document from the Kennedy administration in which they had considered the idea that they might have to fake it. And I'm not saying that was Kennedy's idea, but apparently someone on the cabinet considered it at that time. Now, by the time Nixon was president, he said himself the number one threat against America is domestic civil unrest because of the Vietnam War. So what better distraction than to give him a pep rally, something to cheer about? And what you have to realize is, you know, one of my sources, not the one who financed the film, who wishes to remain anonymous so that his stock will not go down. And he told me, this is Bill Kaysing, who had top security clearance, who edited interdepartmental memos. So one of the reasons how they keep a secret is they departmentalize everything so no one sees the full picture. But he did, because he edited all the memos. And he edited one in which it said the likelihood of them going to the moon and back successfully without dying on the first attempt was 1 in 10,000. So the other option, you see, is to have them really try and then to kill them on live international television. What a bummer that would be. And
for morale, Bart, and everything
exactly,
else.
Exactly.
For the Russians,
so they could guarantee to boost morale if they staged it. It's simply a bluff like in poker, which has been done hundreds of times during the course of war. You have, you know, 2 twos and your opponent has 3 threes. And so you go all in and they back off. And that was the intent initially with the Soviets and with the American public, was to stage it. I mean, that's why they can't go back. I mean, they said after Kennedy's goal, I think he said it in 1961.
Yeah.
Let's go to the moon by the end of this decade. That they basically achieved that goal in 8.5 years with 50-year-older technology. And now China, you know, which is the most industrialized country on the earth, they said it's going to take 20 years with 50 years newer technology to go to the moon for the first time for them.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, there's so many inconsistencies to this. I mean, Neil Armstrong claimed he personally picked up a rock off of the moon, personally gave it to the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, and then a gentleman watched my film, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. He got curious. He opened a hermetically sealed box in the museum of that very rock that Neil Armstrong claimed he picked up off the surface of the moon and personally delivered to the Prime Minister of the Netherlands. They put it under a microscope, and it's an out-of-this-world-looking piece of petrified wood. The story made the headlines around the world. The moon rock is fake, but no one dared ask the so rudimentary question.
Why?
If the moon rocks are fake, what about the moon mission?
Bart, this is brilliant. I just want to put two things to bed. My listeners are used to me playing the devil's advocate with people. I can't do that with Bart because I believe Bart, and I've talked to Bart about this so many times over the years. And the photographic evidence and everything else, it's ridiculous. There's so much evidence that it was faked. So don't expect me to challenge Bart. But if you want me to put questions to Bart that, you know, if you think Bart is wrong, tweet me and I'll put those questions to him straight away. Here's another one I want to put to bed. I've briefly, I don't know her personally, I've never met her, but I've briefly gotten to know Vivian Kubrick, the daughter of the filmmaker Stanley Kubrick. And I like Vivian a lot. She's a really interesting lady. And I spoke to her a couple of times on the phone. And Vivian says, well, whatever happened with the moon landings and, whether there are doubts about them or not, she says, I'm absolutely certain that my father wasn't involved. Now, that's come up on our Twitter feed, understandably. Do you think, Bart, yourself, that they might have used a qualified man, such as yourself, you're a filmmaker. Do you think they would have used a filmmaker to help them fake it?
Well, they had to. I mean, I appreciate her sentiment toward her beloved father, but the fact is, all of us have beloved fathers. I had a beloved father who was in the military and who did all sorts of secret things that he never told me about. I think she doesn't understand him the same way I do. I understand him filmmaker to filmmaker. She understands him daddy, to daughter. And let me tell you, the reason why she doesn't believe it is because dear old dad wouldn't do something that devious or corrupt or whatever. But from a filmmaker to filmmaker point of view, he didn't see it that way. He took it as the ultimate challenge that he could make a film so realistic people would not know that it wasn't real. In fact, in 1969, a film came up for best makeup, and that was Planet of the Apes. And the reason why 2001 A Space Odyssey apes were not nominated is because the Academy thought they were real apes. Because Kubrick's makeup was so real, they thought the apes were real. I mean, he fooled filmmakers. And let me tell you, when in The Shining, the little Red Rum boy stands up with a handmade shirt saying Apollo 11 on it, I think something's going on here. I mean, here's the choice. We know the moon landings were fake, so they had to have a filmmaker in charge of it. They had two choices. They could hire the general at the media department at the Pentagon and get great security and amateur results, or they could hire the best filmmaker on the planet who coincidentally was filming a film about going to the moon. And Von Braun and Eugene Krantz, who was the flight director and the rocket designer, they visited the set of 2001 A Space Odyssey. Von Braun went to Antarctica and retrieved lunar meteorites, 6 months before they claimed to bring moon rocks back. I mean, I don't know for a fact, and it's certainly speculative.
Well, that's fair enough.
Anything to do with whether they really win or not, but I think they would have chosen the short-term benefit of getting quality filmmaking and worry about security later.
Well, that's fair.
And he said, let me add one more
thing. Go on, Bart. Go on.
In the film Eyes Wide Shut, which was his last film, he insisted contractually, a year before the film came out, that it opened on a particular day. They didn't know why, he insisted, but they wanted the contract resolved, so they said, fine, whatever. That date that he insisted that it open on was the 30th anniversary of the launch to the moon, Eyes Wide Shut. And he died before the film came out, and he still got his death wish because it was in the contract. Now, it means something. Either he knew that the moon landings were fake, you know, or this is why he knew, because he was the genius who they hired.
And of course, we'll never know. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence there, and I touched on some of this with Vivian, but she's convinced, and genuinely convinced. She isn't, I don't think she's part of any cover-up at all, actually. She's absolutely convinced that it isn't him. But you open another possibility there that's very interesting, that maybe he was aware of it and tried to blow the whistle on it, even if he wasn't himself involved. Because you make a good point. Young Danny Torrance, the character in The Shining, in the film, that is a bizarre thing, isn't it, that astronaut shirt with Apollo 11 on it. It is bizarre. There's so many. This is the greatest story ever, Bart. You know what I mean? This is why so many people have watched your film. Let me just remind our listeners, Bart Sabrell is live on the programme today. YouTube.com/Bart Sabrell 1. Look for Bart Sabrell on YouTube. There's no other. You'll find him there. Sabrell.com is Bart's website. Lots of he's made so many films, Bart. He already mentioned Astronauts Gone Wild, an investigation into the authenticity of the moon landings as well. Really good stuff. Let me get to a couple of tweets there, because there's been a lot of them. I'm worried that we're not going to get so many of them. Ramon tweets this: please ask Bart what he thinks about the idea that UFOs were waiting on the edge of the crater and have sent them off the moon because humans were a danger to the universe because of the nuclear bomb. Wow. I don't know about that, but I have heard similar theories before, that we did make it, maybe not in 1969, but we made it at some stage, but we found things there that we weren't meant to find. I know you've heard this before. What do you think, Bart?
Well, he has fallen to a psychological tactic of the CIA, which is basically this. There's what's called the UFO community, which is a group of people, of intellectuals with very high IQs, who speculate about UFOs. The government doesn't believe why you believe that the moon landings are real, only that you do. If you believe they're real because UFOs are there and that's why the pictures were fake, they sent secret crews or whatever, they don't care why. That's just a red herring to chase you down the wrong rabbit hole. You know, the fact is, if they could go to the moon on the first attempt, you know, with 1960s technology, there would be bases there now. The fact that there aren't means that they didn't go in the first place. And, for example, Edgar Mitchell, who I've, you know, been in his house and sat down with him and talked to him, he says UFOs are real and the moon landings are real. Of course, we know the moon landings are fake. So he's lying about that, too. The government wants you to believe in UFOs for who knows what reason, but I'd keep an eye on it. For example, Richie, last time in a hotel, I'm bored, I'm flipping through the 10 movies on HBO. 3 of the 10 are about UFOs or aliens from outer space. Now, think about this. If 3 of the films were about how terrible a president Trump is, or 3 of the films were about how great of a president he is, wouldn't you think there's a media campaign to alter your mind? And 1/3 of the movies out there were trying to get people to believe in UFOs. You know, it's just unbelievable. And these intellectuals who recognize that the moon landings are fake because the pictures are fake, they still somehow want to believe they're real and want to believe in UFOs and so forth. Believe me, if the government wants you to believe in something, it's not true. If UFOs had the intelligence and the technology to travel 300 million light years, they would have the ability to not be seen. So the fact that they are seen means they want to be seen. And the only reason that I can think of why they want to be seen is it's some sort of delusion that the government wants you to believe in.
That's interesting. That's an interesting theory, because, I mean, obviously with the universe being as big as it is, and other planets and civilizations that might be older and more advanced, we have to think it's a very genuine and very real possibility that UFOs probably have entered our atmosphere. At least I would believe that anyway, over the years. But I think I'm not to disrespect Ramon's comment, but I think I'm with you on what you said there about that and the moon. Let me read a couple of more of these out. These are some really good stuff coming in. David tweets, David Kona, that in the comedy film Dumb and Dumber, Jim Carrey's character leaves the bar and scoffs at the man landed on the moon framed paper clipping. But that's an interesting one, because Jim Carrey is a guy who's very interested in these types of subjects. I'm well aware of that. I know somebody who knows Jim Carrey, or knows him kind of loosely, and he's very interested in this sort of thing as well. Gojira tweets on Twitter that there's a big Masonic connection to the faking of it. Hollywood, every astronaut is a 33rd degree Mason, the great deceivers. Bart, did you ever find any evidence of that, that the astronauts are members of Masonic lodges?
I'll get back to that in just a second. I wanted to ask you a question about the previous question. I never saw Dumb and Dumber. I guess I was afraid it would rub off on me. So you're saying one of the characters believed the moon landings were fake, or did he believe they were real?
Well, he's leaving a bar. I do remember the scene because I've seen the film a few times. And the film is about two intellectually challenged guys who have a series of hilarious mishaps on the way to return a briefcase to a woman. And at one stage in the film, they're leaving a bar and one of them notices a framed newspaper clipping from the day of the landing or the day after. And he laughs at it as if it's just ridiculous, like it never happened.
Okay, perfect. Okay, that answers the question, listeners. So listen to this really quickly about what Richie just said. A character who is supposed to be extremely stupid believes that the moon landings are fake. You see how Hollywood is trying to associate, if you believe the moon landings are fake, you must be stupid. Now, that's pretty, number one, that argument is so juvenile, I can't believe the CIA is using it, that if you believe the truth, you're stupid. I mean, go to Sibrel.com, click on Conspiracy Corner link, and then go down about five or six articles to the article, Did We Land on the Moon with 1960s Technology on the First Attempt? There is so much evidence that we did not go to the moon, much more than we did go. Now, in regard to 33 degree Masons and all that, I don't know much about that, but colleagues of mine who do assert that that is true. And they certainly have those rings and insignias on their hands, on their sleeves, and in their homes. Now, I don't know what Masons are, Illuminati are, or whatever it is, but you know, it sounds like they're a secret society, and I'm sure you're familiar with Kennedy's famous speech about that. He says, you know, secrecy and democracy contradict one another and should not be there. What we know from the government, Republican and Democrat, in the last, you know, 50 years, they use secrecy as an excuse simply to hide their felonies. I mean, for one, it came out in 1947 after the end of the war when the OSS changed to the CIA that the government said, okay, we're going to allow you to exist, but you cannot use propaganda. Propaganda against our own citizens is a felony. Well, that's what faking the moon landing is. So they broke that felony. You know, they broke that law. Okay, then in the late 50s, there was the quiz show scandal where Time magazine had on their cover with the headline, The Smartest Man in America. And he was, as long as he got the answers in advance. And so when that scandal came out, Congress wrote another law. It says you cannot use television to deceive people. So the government broke that law. You know what I mean? It's amazing. They keep writing laws to make their crimes legal when, you know, and there are already so many laws that prove that their crimes are illegal. I mean, this is our country. It is so, so sad. And people wonder why in the entire history of the nation are more people recanting their citizenship of the United States of America, because it's a police state. It's unbelievable. The government lies all the time about virtually everything.
Yeah. You know, I saw you do an interview recently with SGT Reports. Very good, Bart. We might touch on one or two things that came out of that in a second. 27 minutes past the hour. We've got about 25 minutes more with Bart. This is great stuff. Great to catch up with you again, buddy. It really is. It's been too long. Thought of you this morning. I thought, you know, I'd love to have a chat with Bart, and here you are. Great stuff. It's a kind of astral projection, I think, getting you back on the program. David tweets, Buzz Aldrin admits they did a Masonic ritual. Had the robes under the suits, he said. Did he? Masonic ritual is code for it's all a load of old tosh. Liz tweets, thanks, Liz. Peter Hyatt was a professional statement analyst, and he came to the conclusion that the astronauts were possibly telling lies about the story. And Jen tweets us, love is a four-letter word, Jen. Good afternoon from Sacramento, California, sending love and positive thoughts to you, to Bart, and to all the listeners. Big up to Bart and to his amazing work. That's Jen in Sacramento in California. William tweets, can you ask Bart what does he think about Elon Musk and SpaceX? Great question, Bart. What's going on with this Elon Musk guy? Who is he? He's everywhere at the moment.
Well, have to be careful with this one. Let me just say, people's on-camera personality and behind-the-scenes thoughts may be different. And certainly, there's a saying I was just sharing with my wife, don't bite the hand that feeds you. And apparently, I did that last week when SGT Report, who got two, what do you call it, copyright strikes or community guideline strikes from YouTube, and he has 300,000 subscribers and makes a living to pay his family's bills with all the work he's done on YouTube. And he does, you know, a story about how Building 7, you know, collapsed and 9/11. And he gets these strikes to where they're about to cancel his channel. And he's, you know, very upset about it and says, I wish someone would make a video coming to my aid. I do that. And within a few days of doing that, now my entire channel is demonetized. So if there's three people out there who want to pledge $100 a month or $650 or $15, $20 a month to make up for my ad revenue, I just got demonetized, and $500 of past revenue I'm not going to get simply for coming to this guy's defense.
Well, do you know what happened? Do you know what happened to this program back in February? We had a very young YouTube channel. It was only 3 years old, and I had nearly 90,000 subscribers, and I had 20 million views. Remember, our show is a live radio show first and foremost. We just archive the interviews on YouTube. It isn't a YouTube show. I'm not being a snooty, or, you know, I'm not looking down on you, far from it. But this is a live radio show. Nearly 90,000 subscribers, 20 million views, and in late February, Bart, they deleted my channel. Just deleted the entire channel.
What happened is whoever started YouTube, that was bought up.
That was the plan, right?
I have sources in the military, in the government, who told me years ago, all these black budgets, which I think on the record are like $50 billion a year, the military has budgets they don't have to explain a dollar of, not to mention the missing trillion or whatever, which is another matter. But they bought up AT&T, Verizon, Google, Facebook, and they put these, you know, token CEOs, all of them, so that they can control the media. The reason is so that they don't have to get warrants for spying on you, because when you say, I want to have Yahoo email or whatever, you check that little box and it gives them the right to scan, just read, your emails. And then they own the hard drives, and so they have the right to inspect them. So really, we're kind of stuck. What I'm surprised no lawyers out there, if you're patriots and listening, you know, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff has become a utility. Now, they can't say, Richie, I like your political views, so I'm going to give you electrical power. And SGT Report, I don't like you, so I'm going to pull. You won't have AC, you won't have a stove, you won't have a refrigerator. If anyone did that, it would be all over the news, I hope, or protests or whatever. And yet they're doing that on YouTube, Facebook, and all of this, which have become utilities. Why someone doesn't argue that they're a utility and subject to fairness?
Absolutely, Bart. Absolutely. You
know,
and a monopoly.
I don't know why that hasn't come up yet.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it's a monopoly. It's outrageous. Penny tweets, how you doing, Penny? How could they possibly get to the moon in what looks like a rocket made on Blue Peter, held together with sticky back plastic? Blue Peter is a children's program, Bart, as you probably guessed. Bart Sabrell is our guest. If you haven't seen his films before, check them out. A funny thing happened on the way to the moon. Astronauts Gone Wild and his other films. You can find them at Sabrell.com. Go to YouTube.com. Bart Sabrell 1 on YouTube, while his YouTube channel is still there. This is serious. This isn't funny, what's happening to YouTube. Rakoba tweets, is it true that Neil Armstrong converted to Islam in later life? I have no idea. Did he, Bart?
No, I never heard of that one.
Me neither.
No. But I can tell you is that, you know, some of the astronauts claim to be Christians, but according to the Bible, it says he who loves and practices a lie will be thrown into the lake of fire. So I don't see how you could lie and be a Christian. It says, tell the truth to your neighbor, you know, so I'm not sure what's going on. Of course, so many politicians and people like that throw on the hat of Christianity, and of course they're not. And they just use it for political reasons. You know, I'm not sure why. In regard to the rocket from that previous tweet, we have documentation written by the hand of Von Braun and him saying so on camera from the 1950s, that the idea of flying from the Earth to the moon in one rocket is impossible. He said it would take three rockets, each taller than the Empire State Building, each weighing 10 times the tonnage of the Queen Mary, or some 800,000 tons. Of course, the Saturn V was 2,500 tons, or a difference of 30,000%. He even said so on camera in a Disney special from the 50s. He said, first, you have to build a space station, which was only completed, what, 5 years ago, and then you'd have to ferry up the fuel in stages and from there go to the moon. So I saw this guy on YouTube, Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's this pop scientist. Oh, my gosh. He says, well, we had a rocket. It went up. It went somewhere, so it must have gone to the moon. I'm like, do you think David Copperfield is going to levitate an elephant without showing you an elephant? You think they're going to fake going to the moon without launching a rocket? Yeah. I mean, Von Braun said he published it in a book. We have it. We show it. It's in the article. You would take three rockets, each with 30,000% more weight than the Saturn V to go to the moon, and you'd have to have a space station built first. This is exactly what they showed in 2001, A Space Odyssey, because that's what would be necessary to go to the moon. They didn't just fly to the moon in 2001, A Space Odyssey. They flew to the space station first, and from there went to the moon, and that's not what they did. They cannot leave Earth orbit. They cannot leave Earth orbit today, 50 years later, so how could they do it on the first attempt 50 years ago with 50 years older equipment? Come on, people, wake up.
Brilliant stuff. Right, stay where you are, my friend. We've got a 2-minute ad break to take. That's all it is, 2 minutes. When we come back then, we'll go till about 3-4 minutes to the top of the hour, because I've got to get out by the top of the hour. I want you to think about this while we take the 2-minute break. Two questions coming in, brilliant questions. Number one, why didn't the Russians blow the whistle? And number two, how many people do you think have been killed to keep this a secret, right? Keep those in mind. Bart Sabrell is our guest. A funny thing happened on the way to the moon. It's been watched millions and millions and millions of times. Sabrell.com is Bart's website address. 2 minutes, Bart, if you want to grab a glass of water there. It's probably a bit earlier for something stronger. Quick break, back with more from Bart Sabrell.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajewski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back. It's right. Bart Sabrell is our guest. Great to have Bart back on this program after nearly 3 years. Check out Sabrell.com. I was blessed to meet Bart on the radio in Spain back in around 2008. Delighted that we've kept in touch and that he gives us his time, because this is very serious stuff. It's entertaining at times and we have a laugh at times, but it's very, very serious. John tweets, before we talk about the Russians and why they haven't kicked up more of a fuss, Bart, and about people getting killed, John Kerr tweets, has Bart seen the video where the Apollo capsule is flying over the moon and captures what looks like smoke or gases coming out of a chimney stack? What do you think, Bart?
Well, in regard to the Russians, I think it was the Russian ambassador to either the UN or the United States who made some comment just a few days after Apollo 11 suggesting that it was fake. And apparently his superiors said not to do that again. Here's the thing. I mean, that's an excellent question. One of the best questions, really, about the hoax. The first question is, how could you fool 140,000 people? You know, which seems like a good question, which it's not. Do you really think they're going to tell the guy making the glove and the boot and the door, hey, by the way, the moon landings are going to be fake, but don't tell anybody? It's a pyramid scheme. You know, at the beginning of the film, you do a dolly shot past the all these guys at the console, right? This is seconds before they go to the moon for the very first time, and they're all kicked back watching television like the rest of us. One of them later confessed right before he died they could tell no difference whatsoever between a simulation and an actual flight. Now, regard to the Russian question, I believe the following. Let's say you had a picture of the president with a prostitute. You could do two things. You could give it away to the media and ruin his presidency, or you could blackmail him year after year after year. Now think which is more valuable to Russia. If they have reconnaissance proof, some sort of spy evidence that the moon missions were fake, it would be much more to their advantage to hold that over the United States' head, administration after administration after administration, to get things that they wanted. We know during the Cuban Missile Crisis, Kennedy agreed to pulling, you know, missiles out of Turkey, even though if he acknowledged that publicly at the time, it would make him look weak or whatever. But that was a fact. And who knows why we sold, you know, so much wheat to our, quote, enemy below cost and all these other things that we've done. This whole idea that Russia or China or whatever is our enemy is another lie. They may be our competitor, but that's different than an enemy. I mean, Russia, China, they have enough problems running their own country and feeding their own people. The last thing in the world they would want to do is set foot on conquering the continental United States. So that just shows all this waste of money. I mean, we spent $1 trillion on the military, and 9/11 still happened because of box cutters. You know, I don't understand if one person, I don't know, makes some professional mistake, let's say they're in a submarine and they run into a mountain, you know, that captain is fired for the rest of his life. And yet the CIA gets caught lying and lying and lying and killing innocent people. That's a proven fact. And they're still allowed to be in business. Why? I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, it just boggles the mind.
Yeah, good stuff. I'd like the Russians to use that Trump card about the moon now that the United States and the UK and France, you know, is largely responsible for laying waste to Syria. By the way, I don't believe the official story of September 11th, but you and I have gotten into this before. Brilliant stuff, this. It's really, really good stuff. Let me just scroll down because there are loads of really interesting
points.
Yeah, well,
while you're looking at that, let me just say this. I mean, if Trump really wants to undo the deep state and the deep state controlled media, all he has to do is force the CIA director or force one of the astronauts as their commander to confess the fact that the moon landings are fake and that the CIA did it. And they did it by controlling the media. I mean, Woodward and Bernstein at the time of Watergate found out that the CIA, this is in the 70s, while newspapers were still owned by hundreds of people instead of half a dozen people, they said they had at least 400 CIA agents in all media. And they listed all the majors, ABC, NBC, CBS, Reuters, you know, Time Magazine, Life Magazine. They had CIA writers in all of those. And that's how they pulled off faking the moon landing. I mean, people believe it because they say they saw it on TV. If you think about this, Richie, it's the only positive conspiracy. I mean, whoever killed Kennedy, he's still dead. Whoever did 9/11, 3,000 people are still dead.
Yeah,
but this is a positive conspiracy, and it becomes a religion to people. I've talked to professors at universities when I asked them, if you saw Buzz Aldrin confess on national TV that it was fake, would you then accept that fact? He says, no, I just don't think
so. That's incredible, isn't it?
And this is a professor at a major university. It's a religion to people, a religion. You know, they're either intellectuals or whatever. We won the Super Bowl. We did this. Well, were you on the team? No. Were you at least in the stadium? No. You were watching it at home from TV. And that's why it was real, and that's why we did it. It's taking candy away from a baby.
Of course it is. Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I remember going to school, to primary school in Waterford City in the Republic of Ireland. And I remember being told about it and shown the videos, and it was incredible. And, you know, whatever Hollywood films were made in the 1980s about the moon landings, we watched them. It was incredible. Just a word on, because, you know, it was a lie, but it was used for, it was used to achieve a positive result, obviously for morale, of course, to convince people that everything was okay, that the US had hegemony in the world and all of that. But back to the negative side of it, just briefly, you made a brilliant point about compartmentalization, by the way, which is huge and also applies to the atomic bomb development as well. But about people dying, Bart, surely a lot of people have had to be silenced. There must be deaths.
Fewer than you think. First of all, there's nothing positive about it. Nothing. There's a line from a movie. It says, "The bitterest truth is better than the sweetest lie." Okay, we have to realize that. There's no excuse for what they did. No excuse. We claim to be a light on a hill. You know, like Reagan said, the bearer of truth and justice and democracy for the world. And to do this to our own people, to take their tax money, to lie to them, is inexcusable. Now, the CIA is supposed to be an intelligence gathering agency, but they overthrow governments, they assassinate people. That means they have an army. Now, according to the Constitution, the CIA is not allowed to have an army. Only the president is in charge of an army. You see what I'm saying? And when Schumer, whoever gets on national TV and says they have 6 ways from Sunday to ruin your life, Mr. President, you know, or president-elect or whatever it is, I mean, that's true. So why are they not shut down? I just don't understand this.
really good, Bart. I want to get through 3 or 4 more questions before we run out of time. There's some very funny questions. I'm going to ask one or two that seem to be recurring. One is about the photographs that we were given from Elon Musk's Tesla. A lot of people don't like those photographs, Bart, for one reason or another. I don't necessarily suspect them. I think they're probably real photographs. After all, it's a car. It's a dummy or a mannequin in the car. Have you seen anything in those photographs that cause you any concern?
Well, I stopped caring. You know, they already faked the moon landing. Yeah. And who knows? You know, I would say half of what NASA does is real and half is fake. When they send a probe out to Jupiter, I mean, the very first probes, Pioneer 1 and 2, they sent out in the 70s. There's a NASA movie, if you can find it. It says the reason why they're sending out 2 probes to the far end of the solar system is their search for Planet X to triangulate its location. And now all of a sudden, they never mentioned Planet X ever again. The guy at NASA who told me in the 80s, okay, that the moon landings were fake, he said, "Bart, that's old news. You need to do a film about Planet X." I said, "What's that?" He says, "It's a rogue planet with a comet-like orbit that comes around every, you know, 360 years or something, and it's due to come in the second decade of the next century." And I'm like, "Oh, that's, you know, 30, 40 years from now. Who cares?" Well, and here we are. You know, I don't know why my YouTube channel got demonetized. It's probably because of the SGT report. But also in that, I point out 3 or 4 recent scientific journals that are pointing to the year 2022. One says, "Hey, by the way, there's going to be a new bright object in the sky in the year 2022. It's 2 stars colliding." Now, if they're, 50 light years away or 100 light years away, and it takes information to go back and forth, how could they even predict that in advance? But they're making an excuse, you see, for this new bright object in the year 2022. My Planet X guy at NASA, he said it's going to cause meteor showers, and they're going to lie and say it's a comet or something. Now they're telling us in the year 2022, there's going to be an unexpected meteor shower. And then I have a source of military intelligence who said the year for Planet X is 2022. Then they're sending a probe to an asteroid in 2022. Then they're having a special solar flare protection system up by the end of 2021 in preparation for 2022. I mean, I don't know what's going on. NASA obviously cannot be trusted. None of the astronauts can be trusted. Again, if they say the moon landings are real and aliens are real and the moon landings are false, I would say the same thing about the aliens.
Really good, Bart. There's been a number of questions about your encounter with Buzz Aldrin. We've been asked, why didn't you hit him back? I know the answer to this. I've asked you this before, so I won't answer it for you.
I can tell you that I was there. I mean, that was the furthest thing from my mind. It would be the same as me tripping over you know, a bottle on the ground and falling, I just get back up and keep answering the questions. It was irrelevant that he hit me. I did think about suing him because I thought, hey, the guy's rich. I could get a house out of it. But then here I am trying to be a Christian. And, you know, it's surprising. Everything is in the Bible, including interest and line scales like Whole Foods did. That's in the Bible. Don't have line scales. It's thousands of years old. Nothing has changed. And Jesus said, when someone strikes you on the cheek, to not do anything about it. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, no, fair play.
I thought I could sue him. I was tempted. But, you know, I have a certain amount of empathy for him. You know, in Astronauts Gone Wild, he admitted twice on camera that the moon landings are fake. Number one, he said, I was just a passenger. And yet he claimed to be the pilot to land on the moon. And then he said, oh, and this makes you a real famous person for having discovered this. How could I be famous if it's wrong? Therefore, he admitted I was right. When he realized he made those two admissions, then he, of course, threatened to sue us if we showed those remarks to anybody. All that you can see through the YouTube link as well. These guys were pressured. I mean, I think this footage of them faking the shot right in front of your eyes, which you can see in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. You can hear the CIA on the third channel asking them to wait 4 seconds. I mean, they hear the answer, 4 seconds go by, then they say talk. It's to give the impression they're further away from the Earth than they really were. That's on the tape too.
Hey, Bart, let me ask you a very quick question on that. Thanks for reminding me of that again. They wanted to give the impression there was distance, so there was somebody telling Armstrong to wait 4 seconds, then answer. Am I right in saying that if you really were on the moon back in 1969, it would actually take more than 4 seconds for that audio to reach you?
Well, actually, it would. They calculated merely based on light speed, but they failed to take into account all of that analog equipment and telephone equipment it would have to go through. You know, if you're in just L.A. to New York or L.A. to London and you're on live CNN, multi-million-dollar NBC equipment, and you say, hi, Richie, how's it going? It's like, 1, 2, 3, I'm doing fine. Can you imagine the analog equipment?
Yes,
you
know,
it probably would have been a 10-second delay, but they were just guessing. And that's on the tape, too. It's amazing. You know, we have the CIA talking on this tape while they're faking a shot over and over and over again right in front of your eyes. That was the life-changing experience. And the reason why it's life-changing is I realize, oh, my gosh, the world is so sad. It's so wicked. It's so deceptive that someone would do such a thing. Yes, there have been people who have been killed. James Irwin, Apollo 15 astronaut, became a born-again Christian. He calls up Bill Casing, the leading investigator, before his death, before I hit the scene. Imagine me saying, hold on, Richie, I got Buzz Aldrin calling me. And Buzz Aldrin says, we need to talk. I've become a born-again Christian, right? And then so this guy, James Irwin, says, I'm afraid for my life. Please call me at this number 3 days from now. And on that day, the astronaut had a fatal heart attack.
Wow.
Not to mention the Apollo 1 fire, whose family I've interviewed for at least 6 hours, who are absolutely convinced the CIA set that fire. Now, why would the CIA set the Apollo 1 fire? I mean, does no one understand what's going on? And this is one of the reasons why they don't want the truth to come to light. If no one was ever killed, then it's just faking the moon landing. But if they killed, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people to do it, then the government is guilty of not
of
only
mass
killing,
murder,
people,
yeah.
killing the, their heroes. And what we live in a country where our heroes are liars. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins were given the Congressional Medal of Honor. I mean, honor for lying. Here's a medal for lying.
Do you know what? Do you know what, Jesus?
Does anybody care?
Do you know a lot do? And it's because of researchers like you that a lot care. Just before we run out of time, I want to mention one thing. This is what cheeses me off more than anything. I've seen you over the years. Sometimes you're treated badly by the mainstream media, but other times over the years you've been treated well. You know, they've listened and they've said, oh, that's, you know, it's interesting stuff, Bart. And then they've shuffled their papers on their desk and they've moved on. I mean, shame on the mainstream media. When you presented, you know, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon to the world, you know, a lot of media looked at it and went, oh, it's really interesting stuff, Bart, thanks very much. They had a bloody duty to follow it up, Bart, didn't they? I mean, they should have followed it up. Wow, Bart Sapir's got some interesting stuff here, really interesting. And then it's like, oh, we'll move on to the sports, and then they don't do it again. It's so maddening, because there's only so much we can do.
The film was purchased on 5 occasions, including by the BBC. And days before it was supposed to air, they canceled it. The only show that has broadcast nationally the secret footage of them faking being halfway to the moon was a show on Tech TV, which was shown in every household in America. And it was the number one rated show on that network, gaining 100% more viewers every 30 days for 3 years.
Huge.
And as soon as they aired that footage, the show was canceled.
And the lousy BBC
NBC bought exclusive rights to air this footage. They got a call from NASA, according to the producer who told me this. They got a call from NASA, and they said, if you air that film, we're going to unplug your live feed from the International Space Station on all your programs. Okay? Fox, you know, lawyers refused to air the program as is. I talked to the reporter at the Washington Post, which broke Watergate. I said, explain to me that secret footage I uncovered. Explain that to me. He says, I cannot. I said, do you think we went to the moon? He says, I have my doubts. I said, why don't you do a story about it? And he said, if I did that, I would be fired.
Career ending. It would be career ending. We're going to leave it there for today. Do us a favor, Bart. It's been nearly 3 years. Let's get you back on in the autumn, because I know you've got a lot of really interesting things to say about other things besides the moon landing. I'd love to have you back on after the summer. It'd be an honour to have you back. Folks, go to Sobrel.com, and if you're on YouTube and if you've got an account, or if you just browse YouTube, just put Bart Sobrel in. You'll find his channel. It's youtube.com/Bart. Sobrel one. Loved having you back, Bart. I'm very fond of you and your work. It's hugely, hugely interesting, and nobody is more engaging as a guest than you in talking about this stuff. I'll give you the final word, my friend, and then we'll have to call a halt to today. Thanks for coming on. Final word to you.
Well, make sure they know how to spell Sobrel, S as in Sam, I, B as in boy, REL.com, and you'll get all of my links, including YouTube channel and Conspiracy Corner, where you can read a lengthy article, Did We Go to the Moon, 48 years ago on the first attempt. And if people want to make up for my recently rebuked demonetization of my entire channel, I'm looking for maybe three sponsors at 100 a month, or six at 50 a month, or 15 at 20 a month to make up for that, so I can keep my phone on.
Brilliant. Well, good luck with it, mate. And thanks for giving us your time today, especially short notice as well. I know you're in demand. I've loved having you back. So have our audience. And I look forward to speaking to you again in the autumn. Let's book a date later on to do that. Thanks, Bart. Godspeed to you and to your family. Look after yourself.
Likewise, Richie, and I love your show. Keep up the good work.
Cheers, mate. Bye for now. The brilliant Bart Sobrel, live on the Richie Allen Show. Sobrel.com. Sierra, Indigo, Bravo, Romeo, Echo, Lima. That's right. Sobrel, S-I-B-R-E-L.com. Top man. That's about it for the show today, then. We've got to wrap it up very quickly. Thank you to Bart for coming on. Thanks to you for listening to the programme in the first hour. It'll be on podcast real soon. Give a big shout out to Simon Stewart. If you come across Simon on Facebook, thank him for looking after the YouTube channel. I'll love you and leave you. I'll be back with you on Sunday morning for Sunday View at the usual time. That wasn't supposed to happen. At the usual time on Sunday, 11 a.m. British Summertime. That's right. That's the Oasis song you were meant to hear. Not the other one. Thanks for your comments. Have a great weekend. I hope it stays sunny wherever you are for the next few days. And Sunday at 11. Monday, this coming Monday, the wonderful Steve Keane, economist extraordinaire, will be on the Richie Allen Show. Again, we're going to talk European Union and Italy and economics with Steve Keane this coming Monday. But we'll have Sunday View before that at 11. Look after yourselves. See you soon. Bye now.
How many special people change? How many lives are living strange? Where were you while we were getting high? Slowly walking down the hall, faster than